Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our consumer protection experts are back. Sandy Chalmers, Assistant Deputy Secretary with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Sandy, great to have you back.
Nice to be here, Larry.
Yeah, and Michelle Reinen with us as well. She is Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, Larry.
Always works better if I turn your microphone on, which I have now done, so we'll be able to hear Michelle answer your questions when you call in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. The IRS recently released its IRS Dirty Dozen list for 2017. What were some of the most common scams that we had, Sandy?
Well, this is a list of common tax schemes and scams.
Yeah.
And the tax schemes, I think, we'll leave to a tax expert when they come on your show. But some of these scams are ones that we hear about all the time. And number one on the IRS's list was phishing. And this is where criminals send you an email or call you on the phone and try to steal your financial information. Just remember that the IRS will not email you, especially if it's a first contact. Many times you'll see an email that looks legitimate. It may have the IRS seal on it. But what it'll typically ask you to do is click on a link. And as we've discussed many times, when you click on a link in a bogus email, malicious software or spyware of some kind will be downloaded on your computer or device. So be aware that the phishing emails that appear to be from the IRS are typically something that peaks during tax filing time.
How common is tax ID theft? Is it very common? We know.
It has been very common. It did drop a little bit in the last year in 2016, and that's because the IRS has gotten much better at ID verification, and unfortunately it is delaying the processing time for your refunds, but in the end I think we're all happy knowing that those verification tools are stopping or at least slowing down ID tax theft.
Yeah, that's very good to know. Sometimes you can be a victim without even knowing that you've been a victim. Yes scams? Do you know about the Yes scams?
Yeah, so about a month ago, I think the Yes scams started to really become very noticeable. And some people know it as the Can You Hear Me scam, where you get a phone call and they ask for you and they're trying to do their solicitation or get your attention. But then at some point early in the call, it becomes real garbled and like the phone is cutting out.
One.
So can you hear me? The caller says. And you, of course, say yes, because now it's crystal clear. And what the caller is doing is recording you saying yes. And what we're monitoring and watching, what we believe is behind this at the National Consumer Protection, the Federal Trade Commission, and others believe is happening is they're taking that recording and using it to verify and support these unauthorized charges that they're tacking on to your bills, whether it be your phone bill or potentially a credit card bill for different travel or cruises and things that you didn't really authorize the charge for. We call it the Yes scam to remind consumers it's going to take on other forms, like all things do. It's not just going to be, can you hear me? They're going to ask you a different question and try and get you to say yes. So even trying to be cautious with, hi, is this Jane? Who's calling, please? You know, don't just say yes right away because you don't know. if you do encounter and end up involved in this and have said yes, the big thing to do is monitor your bills. We talk about that pretty much every time we're on the show, but now it will be really important that you're monitoring for this unauthorized charge or this small charge or repetitive charge. That's had a name over time, and that's cramming, putting something on your bill that you didn't authorize, but reporting that to us. And we're going to work with our partners to track that back to see if we can get at those who are initiating these calls.
Yeah. You know, I just came to mind again. About 2 weeks ago, I'd gotten an email. This goes back to the phishing business. From my credit card company talking about a transfer of money to my account. And I thought, that seems kind of strange. So I called the credit card company, and they said, no, that's a phishing scam. Please send us, forward the email to us. And so, you know, they wanted me to go onto my card or into my account and verify all this. And no, it was not. It was a phishing scam.
Yeah, and good for you for stopping and thinking. And you handled it exactly right. You called the number on the back of your credit card, the customer service number. You didn't call a number in the email.
No.
But that's very typical. And we see a lot of these where they pose as a well-known, well-established company, and they usually include that logo, and it's just a perfect look-alike.
It looked perfect.
And the scary thing is that, you know, we see them at our house from Wells Fargo and a number of banks that we aren't associated, so it's easy to figure those out. The scary thing is when it comes from your own personal bank, and it makes it much more difficult to pick up that it's an imposter.
Yeah.
So whenever there's a question, you get an unsolicited, unexpected email, call the bank or credit card company. Don't click on a link or send. The worst thing you can do is answer their request for personal information.
Dennis, excuse me, Dennis in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling. Dennis, are you there? Let me see if I can get you on here. Are you there, Dennis?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, this is Irv over by Burnett. I have a lot of problems with the people calling about my computer isn't working and I can lower my interest rates on credit cards. And I found out that by reciting John 3:16 to them and telling them about Jesus Christ, that gets your name off of their list. They never call you again. I kind of miss their calls, but it seems like it works pretty good based on religion.
Well, that's one I haven't heard yet, Dennis.
I think that's the first time we've heard of evangelizing to scammers, but maybe in his case it did work. Yeah, we always recommend that you not engage at all, because when you do, it just encourages them. And once you've been tagged as somebody who will engage with these callers, your phone number will be sold to other fraudulent operations, and the calls are most likely to increase. So,
all right. Thanks, Dennis. Let's go to Laura in Arpin next. Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling.
My husband received one of the, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Phone calls on his work-provided cell phone. And his instant reaction was to sign us up in one of, like, the credit protection type programs.
Yeah.
But I wonder what we should do, because it is a work-provided cell phone. Are there different actions that we should take?
What about it? Michelle, Sandy, do you want to take it?
Remember, at this point, all the theories about this are still just hypothetical. We don't really know what they're after. In order to use that yes in some kind of fraudulent cramming, putting unauthorized charges on your credit card, they would also need your credit card number. So I don't think you need to be too concerned at this point. But as Michelle mentioned, you should be watching your credit card statements and your bank statements to make sure that nothing unauthorized shows up. if you're really concerned about it, you can contact your credit card company and see what they say about this. Let them know that you're concerned about this YES scam, that you may be a potential victim. But again, everything is hypothetical at this point, and we don't know whether they're just gathering phone numbers of people to sell on, or whether they're gathering information about your income and any other questions that they may be asking on those calls.
Okay. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Let's go to Dennis in Madison next. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, sir.
What's on your mind?
I get these phone calls about from someone who says they claim that they're a group that deals with Walmart, Home Depot, on the big box brands, and they offer $100 gift cards, but you have to pay a $5 shipping and handling to get the gift card mailed to you. To me, it smells like a scam.
Does to me, too.
Does to me, too. That whole theory of too good to be true to get a big gift card for just $5, I mean, you're going to have to give them your credit card information to pay this $5, and now what will happen with all of that? And often when we've seen this scam appear through a text service, because we've seen get this cheap or free gift card through clicking a link on the text, the gift card never shows up, but you hand over all sorts of personal information. And so this sounds like a phone version of that.
Yeah, it sure does. Thanks for calling and letting us know, Dennis. Don't do it. That's the thing. Peter in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
Morning.
I learned something interesting recently. Typically, I don't answer most of the calls that I get on my phone because they're coming from places unknown and people unknown. But recently, I got a call from the Stoughton Exchange. So, okay, this is somebody who might know me.
Yeah.
So I picked it up, and sure enough, it was Rachel from Account Services. I guess she lives in Stoughton now.
Oh. So, you know, I've had that same issue, Peter, where I've you know, if I get a call from San Francisco, I know darn well it's a fake. But I've had, and Sandy, maybe you can comment on this, I've had local calls. It seemed to be local calls, and then when I picked it up, it was Rachel or somebody else.
Yeah, I've had the same thing happen to me on my cell phone, and the local exchange is the same as my cell phone, my personal cell phone. And I have not picked up on the calls because I'm suspicious, because I work with Michelle, and I know what she would say. But they don't leave a voicemail, and I figure somebody who knows me and needs to talk to me will leave a voicemail. And you just, with all these phishing calls and Rachel calls and IRS calls that are still out there, you just have to be so careful about screening your phone calls.
Actually, I've gone to that now, too, because it took me a couple of times, and I thought, you know what, if they really need to talk to me, they'll leave a message on my answering machine on my phone.
Yeah, the scammers are very good in using technology to their advantage. And for a while, we had a call going through a certain area code, and people would report that their caller ID showed a phone number just one digit different than their own. So, of course, they assumed it was a neighbor, and they picked up. Well, another example of how caller ID can be manipulated to the fraudster's advantage.
Peter, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Taking a look at consumer scams issue, especially during this tax period, the IRS has got a dirty dozen of scams relating to taxes. And so we're talking about that and a whole lot more with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guest will talk about the comeback of giant tortoises on the Galapagos Islands. Right now, we're taking a look at the giant scams that are out there, consumer scams, with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers. And actually, there's an open line or two. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1234. Give a call. We'll get you on the air pretty quickly. John in Wausau up next. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Thanks. I appreciate you taking it. I have a question. I have a friend who is donating money every month to an organization in Uganda. And recently, Western Union canceled one of his transactions going to Uganda without any explanation. And I'm wondering, could it be a possible scam that they're aware of?
It certainly could be. The Federal Trade Commission has worked very closely with the Money Wiring Services and Western Union specifically to really monitor some of the transactions and where the money's going and how it's being picked up, and trying to help consumers not be engaged in some of the scams unknowingly.
Is there any clearinghouse that you could, like, sort of put the organization's name through and find out if it's been listed with any, with the Department of Trade or whatever?
Well, there would be for charities registered in Wisconsin, and the IRS also has a website where you can go to check the tax-exempt status of a charity. But if he's sending to someone in Uganda, who knows who that is?
Yeah, that's what I thought. And he wound up able to get the money to Uganda through some other wire service, but it definitely was a red flag for me, and I was just curious if there was some way to find out for sure if it's been flagged by, because it's in Uganda, so it's not registered with, you know,
anybody here. Yeah.
Sometimes the wire transfer services will not share with you why they blocked the wire transfer.
Exactly, that's what happened.
Yeah.
And I just think it's suspicious. Would you think that was suspicious?
I would say it was very suspicious, and I would encourage him not to try to send any more money.
I would go, I mean, you'd think you'd be able to do a little research online of the company or the organization itself. And if you find an organization, I mean, there would almost for sure be some sort of complaints, I would think, or people complaining about a specific business or organization like that. You'd think. I'd be doing some more online research if it was me.
Right, and you need to be careful of that, because a lot of these scam artists will be very clever in setting up very legitimate websites. So look for, you know, these international charities that exist have a national presence as well that you can verify and check. And as Sandy said, you know, the IRS status, even though they're operating overseas internationally, if they're collecting here, because the investments and those aspects, and they have connections with, you know, with federal agencies and departments to legitimize themselves. So if you're looking to track this organization, don't just find their website and feel good about it. Look for the rest of the trail to support that group.
Makes good sense. John, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Tom in Milwaukee a chance to join in next. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to relay an experience I had. I had someone call me claiming to be from the IRS, saying that I owed back taxes for the year 2013 or something like that. And I knew it was a scam right away, and so I said to him, I'm very happy that you called me, because if I owe you money, I certainly want to pay the government what I owe them. But I had gotten an email yesterday from Agent Jerry Wojciechowski in Chicago, who claimed I had a refund coming. And I called him up on his 800 number, and I gave him all the information he asked for, with a driver's license and social security number and date of birth and everything, so checking account. So he was going to make a deposit into my account, but rather than make a deposit for all that much money, let's just offset it. Why don't you call Agent Wojciechowski and get this all straightened out? Well, the guy wouldn't hear anything of it, and he wanted me to pay right away, and I sprung him along for about 20 minutes and then finally hung up on him.
No. Well, you can string them along, but sometimes you make them mad, too, and then they can do nasty things to you.
Sure, we've heard about those. But Tom, bringing that up, that's the second thing on the Dirty Dozen list, the phone scam aspect of the tax, the IRS Dirty Dozen. And we've seen there was a big crackdown and a number of arrests overseas and in the U.S. back in October of 2016. And so we saw a significant decline in the IRS phone scam. However, it's tax season. So guess what's peaked back up? We are seeing those phone calls come in again. And, you know, we talk about it. You can play with the caller if you want to, but always be real cautious because you could end up on another lead list. You could make them angry. They're very clever. They could dig information out of you unknowingly as well and use that in another form. So our advice is always going to be either don't answer or just hang up.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks so much, Tom, for calling. Appreciate your call. I do remember one of those scammers, actually, on the air. We talked about this. He got mad and he called the local police department and said there was a disturbance at the person's home.
Right.
And so the police show up.
Right.
And so, it's not what you want to have happen, for sure. Rosemary in Frankfort, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Rosemary.
Hello, Larry. I just wanted to make a comment. My daughter and son-in-law file their taxes online every year. And a couple of years ago, they did get a written notice from the IRS wanting verification that they were having their returns sent to another bank account, which was very unusual because they owed money to the IRS that year.
Ugh.
So I don't know how that came about, but someone was trying to have the returns sent to a different bank account.
Oh.
That sounds like a situation of tax ID theft.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what did they do?
Well, they did contact the IRS and explained the situation, and the IRS took over from there, obviously. But they were notified from the IRS that they wanted verification that this is truly what was requested, which obviously it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you get a mailing from the IRS, they typically all have form numbers listed on the bottom and exactly where it's coming from. And then on their website, they have corresponding information. If you get contacted by the IRS or believed to have been contacted by the IRS by email or phone or letter, here's where you can call and verify if those are legitimate or where you can report it. And here's some of the common form numbers and what those forms should then say to you, those form letters. So if you're ever in question exactly what they did, follow up with the true legitimate IRS, a phone number that you get from their website, .gov, or your phone book, not what's in that letter.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much, Rosemary. Anthony in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I love the show and the topic. Well, I'm calling in, and it's kind of a doomsday, and I just wanted to reassure some of the listeners that, you know, not everybody that calls them on the telephone is a scammer. I'm an independent contractor for a cable company in the area. So a lot of what I do is in retention is processing of payments. So, I have all of their pertinent information as far as the account number, the address, the number of equipment, and, what is due on that account. So I make quite a number of calls to people who've never seen me before, and then I have a 757 area code because I'm originally from the East Coast. But I just wanted to, assure people that, you know, there are still some things out there that are not necessarily so, you know, dastardly, and, there are upstanding people who have a job to do, and, you know, do it. Email the customer's receipts, you know, with every payment. But, you know, I do run into a lot of this, and it's fully understood. And one other point I wanted to make was about, like, in a certain situation, I currently have, one of the life lots. So, you know, realistically, all I'm really paying is $30 a month for an updated credit score, because any reputable bank will let you know whether or not, you know, something is amiss. as far as your patterns of spending are concerned. So, you know, they're just a monitoring service like some of those commercials that we see, you know, not actually a bank security, but, you know, a bank security monitor to let you know that the bank is being robbed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you raised some points here. Sandy, you want to talk? And thanks for calling, by the way, Anthony. There are people, and I guess if you, let's say you're with a cable company, you sign up with a cable company, well, you're agreeing, I would assume then, that they can call you. Isn't that right, Sandy?
Well, sure.
Yeah, they should be able to call you.
Because you have an existing business relationship with them. We do hear from people sometimes who say they got a call from, you know, their telecom company or whatever, and they're being asked to verify their account number or the last four digits of their social security number. And that's where people are kind of hesitant because they don't know who's on the other end of the line. So our advice would be, and not to make it more difficult for people like Anthony, but if there is any question in your mind, call the company with a number you have and say, is there a reason why a contractor or somebody would be contacting me about a payment? Because giving that kind of information to a thief can be very damaging to you.
But that's a good way to do it. And then they just call the company and they say, oh, yeah, this Anthony is doing this for us or whatever. And then you know that you can talk to that person.
Right, right.
Okay. Anthony, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Bill in Bondiwell up next. Bill, hello.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. Wonderful program. I've been the subject of a couple of credit card frauds, and of course I'd encourage all our listeners, how I discovered them is I have alerts set up on my credit cards. I think that's available on all of them to alert you to all the charges, and that's how I found them out. But my question is, twice I've been the victim. One is very minor, like $5.99 charges out of California on one credit card, and one was a major one, $9,792 on a different credit card. But my question is, both credit cards, two different credit cards, neither one of them will give me any details as to what the credit card fraud was. They just said, sir, you're fully covered, you're not being charged for it. But I'm curious why they won't give me any details.
Well, Michelle, what do you think?
Could be a few reasons, but the one that comes to mind most is it's going to be an investigation that they're doing. And, like, we don't discuss our ongoing investigations. They're not going to either to trip and trigger anything. Plus, if they're working with law enforcement, they may be prohibited from doing so. And sometimes through their stuff, they may not know yet what's happening. So they have an obligation under law to clear these charges out and not make you responsible. But what's happening with their work process and why it's happening on their cards, that's their business process to figure out. So.
Yeah, and you might read about it a year and a half later, 2 years later. Yeah. It might take that long.
Have been 2 years later, and they never would give me any information.
Yeah, it's probably still ongoing then. Oh, man. Very interesting, but it's nice to know that, and it's always been the case with my credit card company, too, that they've covered. It's, you know, once you're checking your bills and you see something suspicious, typically they're very happy to help you get it straightened out. But they don't want scammers out there either.
No, they want to minimize the amount of fraud against their credit cards as best they can. So catch it early.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bill. Dick in Algoma, your turn. Hi, Dick.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, guys. It's interesting. It seems like we are getting more and more calls. And what I've decided to say is this. I have been advised by my attorney to tell you that you are on a recorded line. Now, what would you like to talk about? And they usually hang up before I finish the sentence.
Well, but there again, Sandy, here's Dick responding to the call.
Yeah, and
as tempting as it always is.
They don't care. They don't care. They're sitting somewhere halfway around the world, and they know you can't touch them, and they don't care if you have an attorney or not. When they hang up, they're just thinking, okay, I'm going to dial the next number. So again, we just recommend that you hang up and not engage. And we realize that it can be fun when you're being tortured by these people to try to get back at them, but you're just perpetuating the cycle, and you are more likely to get further calls if you do engage.
All right. There we go. Thanks, Nick. Anne in St. Germain, thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just recently became the victim of identity theft.
Oh.
I wouldn't have even really realized it. Well, in the beginning of the year, I had a couple of fraudulent charges on one of my credit cards, and then they took care of it, and I didn't think much more of it. But then I started getting these collection agency calls in a different name than my own, and then it continued from there. I started getting bills in the mail, so then I called this company. At first, I thought it was a scam, you know, because they were asking for my personal information, and so I ignored them. But once I contacted them, they said that this account had been taken out under my Social Security number, and so I told them it wasn't mine. And when I checked the three credit bureaus, my Social Security number was associated with this fake name and a fake address, and also with these fake accounts that were opened up. And so I've been, you know, putting the fraud alerts out there on the various things. I've checked my IRS to make sure they didn't file tax return in my name. And I'm just a little, I don't even know what else to do at this point other than, just today I had another credit card that came up with two fraudulent charges, a totally separate credit card. So I just went out and closed all of my credit card accounts. I'm going to close my bank accounts and get all new numbers. Is there anything else that I can do with my Social Security number to, you know, prevent?
And sorry for what happened to you, Anne, but Michelle, do you want to go over what else she might do, or what? Let's take it almost step by step. What should you do in this sort of situation?
So first thing I want Anne to do is to call our 800 number or email us, but 1-800-422-7128. We have a packet of information that we'll send out to her on if you're the victim of identity theft, and it goes through these steps. So filing a complaint with us is one. Filing a police report is another, because victims of identity theft, when a police report is filed, have these rights to information without payment, to services without payment. One of those services is placing a security freeze on your credit reports, all three of them. If you're not a victim of identity theft in Wisconsin, they can charge up to $10, and it is the $10 that's charged. And what that freeze does is prevents anyone from taking out credit using your information. Now, because she's a victim, hopefully by contacting and doing the corrections, credit card companies, the credit reporting agencies have already done this. She's contacted her credit card companies. She's already looked at her IRS information. She'll want to look at her Social Security information and to see if anyone's, you know, taken out a job using her number and your statement of work there. Hate to say it, but you're even going to want to look at your medical to make sure they didn't access any of your provider information and getting medical services. You can verify driver's license information. You can do a check to see if you've had tickets and things, your points online. You can check that so she can make sure, because we don't know how this happened. Did it just happen with your Social Security number, or have they gotten other pieces of information? But this packet we'll send you will have this information in it. And then you can also, with the police if they want, get the statements from the companies who've opened up this credit in your name, who signed these signature cards, and that can help support your police report if they're going to investigate this further. So those are a lot of the initial steps, and there's many more, because sometimes this can take months or years to recover, but you're going to need to be doing monitoring on a regular basis of everything, too.
What a pain.
Yeah, is there a particular credit monitoring service that would be helpful? I mean, should I invest in something like that?
That's a tough one for us in the sense of whichever one you choose, understand what the service is that you're going to be receiving, and then what their privacy policies are and how they secure the information. Because here you're handing over information to someone who then could suffer a breach. Or what is it they say they're going to provide you? Do a thorough check of whoever you are checking out, because some have had actions against them for the representation of the service they'll provide. Some will just help you clean it up after the fact. Some just monitor, and if something happens, you're left on your own. So what we're talking about are all things you can do yourself, but you have to schedule them and take the time, or you can pay someone to do it, but then you've handed over access to your stuff, and are you comfortable with that company?
Okay.
And you can, and I could, you could also go online, and I think, can't you actually look at that particular publication online as well or not?
Online, because of the complexity, it's in different pieces.
Oh.
If she calls this number, she'll talk to one of our victim assistance individuals, and they can be specific to her situation.
Ah.
We have that for identity theft because it is so complex.
Okay. All right. So it's 1-800-422-7128.
Correct.
And I did file the form on your website already. So will that come? Will I get the information that way, or do I still need to call?
No, we try and get to everybody within 5 days of receipt of that. All the information's online, but I have your name, your first name and location, so I'll go back to the office and take a look. We've been under the 5 days right now, so someone should be reaching out to you.
Okay.
Well, all right.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at consumer scams today with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Beware those tax scams and all those other kinds of scams as well. Larry Mueller here taking a look at them with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. You can join in. All our lines are filled. The number is 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Ken in Eau Claire has something for us. Hi, Ken. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, my wife's employer, I believe it would have been a phishing scam. They were sent an email to the office. Acting like the boss who was out of town at a seminar to send the W-2s to her where she was at a seminar. And the person sent them, and I guess it happened in a few other spots in the state. Well, we filed the IRS form. So the fraud alert, possible fraud alert before we did our taxes, because this happened in January. And then we were also offered a 2-year credit monitoring program, which we signed up for. My question is, how long should a person stay with a credit monitoring program? Because this is offered for 2 years at their cost. And also, is there a precedent or any, you know, because we didn't send the information out. We're careful with our info, but in this case it was an employer that had sent it all out, And it's, you know, you kind of feel like, well, we didn't even do it. You know, yeah. I don't know if there's any kind of precedent.
Yeah, okay. Sandy, do you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you took advantage of the free credit monitoring that was offered to you. Because you are the victim of a data breach and it's very sensitive information, I assume that Social Security numbers were given.
Yeah.
This is something that you'll want to watch very carefully. And Michelle kind of touched on this earlier, but a lot of the credit monitoring services, it's just a look at your credit report on a regular basis. That's something you can do for yourself. So I wouldn't pay for that to be done.
Okay.
You can, and we're not in the business of endorsing or recommending services, but something that you can use in your decision making about whether to pay for this on an ongoing basis is to look at the services that are offered. Some of these offer a number of different levels of services, including mm-hmm. things like searching employment databases, tax return type databases, criminal filings. So those are some things you can look at. And again, it's going to be your personal decision how concerned you are about this going forward and looking at the cost of services that are available.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We will continue, obviously. I believe we'll continue to pay for something, you know, to keep up. And maybe a person should do that anyways, or like you said, keep track of your things closer now, especially, even though a person should do that anyways, I guess. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. You got to be vigilant out there for sure, Ken. Thanks a lot for calling, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Diane in Rice Lake has something. Let's go there. Hi, Diane.
Well, hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to alert everybody to a potential cause of your getting so many of these phone calls, and that is our very own Wisconsin DOT, Department of Transportation. I've had it happen to me twice where I've had absolutely no spam calls, period, and when I bought a new car about 5 years ago, right away they started in with warranties, and then it expanded to Rachel and everybody else. And I finally got rid of all of those, and life was going along just fine. I bought a new car just a few months ago, and within 3 weeks, it started again. And I thought, what the heck? And I called the Department of Transportation, and they said, yes, they do sell your information, but to a reliable company. Well, I suspect that company goes ahead and sells it to everybody else. And there is a checkoff box. So when you renew your license or you have anything to do with the DOT, make sure that you check that you do not want your information sold or given to anybody.
Oh, good advice there. If that's what you want, that's good advice.
Yeah,
I think.
She's absolutely right as to when you're purchasing a vehicle on the forms. There is a box there that you need to be watchful as to whether or not it's checked or not and do your preference, because the DOT, through open records law, when requests are made, needs to release information.
Oh, that's how it works. Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you, Diane, for that tip. Appreciate the call very much. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Arlene in Madison, your turn. Hi, Arlene.
Good afternoon. Oh, I don't know, in the morning or afternoon.
Still morning.
Okay. Anyway, I've just spent a good share of this morning going around to any place I had financial accounts. Because yesterday I was contacted by the Adult Protective Services of Dane County, and they said that someone had called in and said I might have been the victim of a scam. All of my accounts are in order, but they can't tell you who called in. I certainly would like to be able to know who and what the heck made them think so, and it's rather disconcerting to have to wonder, and, yeah, you know, another thing to worry about. They said, well, by law, they couldn't now. Is that correct?
Likely.
Yeah, as far as people reporting concerns to the Dane County Adult Protective Services, yeah, they probably
have to.
Right, withhold that information to do those checks. Now, what they were reporting or why there was that concern, boy, I don't know. It's good that you took an inventory and verified everything. If you weren't on a regular process, I guess that's the bright side of the situation.
Yeah, something you can do, Arlene, is call our toll-free hotline number and go through your situation. Just talk through it with one of our ID theft people. And again, that number is 1-800-422-7128. And maybe they can come up with something that you're missing, but sometimes it's just helpful to talk through a situation like this with an expert. So that's something that we might recommend that you do.
Yeah.
Okay. As I say, I went through every single account for the last 3 to 6 months, and there's nothing that's out of line. But it's just irritating to know that people can call in either anonymously or even give information, and the person that's affected has no way of knowing who or what. I would think that most individuals wouldn't know about calling adult protective agencies, that it would be, say, a bank or, a financial institution or something, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, call that 800-422-7128 number and go through it with one of the experts there, and maybe they can shed a little more light on it for you. I appreciate your call, though. Thank you so much. We had Keith in Eau Claire says he thinks he left his thumb drive in a computer at his library, and it had his tax return on it. What steps should he take to protect himself? I imagine he's already called the library to see if there's a thumb drive there, but even then...
Right. Mm-hmm. Did someone see it before and take down that Social Security information? And
then
just
leave
him?
The thumb drive there.
Right. Is it just him, or is there a spouse or dependent where there's that information too? So I think reaching out to our hotline so you can get an ID theft packet and do that analysis to do an evaluation and put the monitoring yourself monitoring in place so you know if something's been triggered. So the number again is 1-800-422-7128 and ask for some ID theft victim information to be sent out, some monitoring.
Jess in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, appreciate your call.
All right. With the problem of identity theft, as prevalent as it is, my question is, on the Social Security card, it says this is not to be used for identification, and yet everybody requires it as an ID. It's supposed to be your tax identification number for when you file. So here, we're using it now as an identifier with medical records or doctor's appointments or job applications or credit card applications, everything involved in our lives requires almost a Social Security number. And yet this is the number one number they can screw with our lives worse than anything else.
Yeah. There's probably a huge cost associated with refiguring all that, Michelle.
There is. And so through best practices across the country, at least, there are things in place where companies are self-evaluating, because there's costs if you have a breach. If you lose this information, there's reputation costs, there's financial costs to your business, there's future customer costs. So many companies are doing self-assessments, best practices of securing information and what they collect. So we have seen companies decrease the requests for Social Security numbers on job applications until they pick the candidate they want. Ask as a consumer or as an applicant, is there an alternative to giving you this number? Can I give you something else? Or can we wait till we get to a certain stage and I know I'm your person, and then I understand you have to check my credit history before you're going to give me this equipment. So can I give it to you at that point? Ask how they secure it. Be confident in that. So it's both parties need to really step up. And then there is the other side of legislation, if that will ever be in place. But it is a huge component of your credit history and tied to your future retirement history as well. So there are it's the tool we have right now, and so minimizing its use is a cooperative effort.
Thank you again for calling. Michael in Madison, your turn. Hi, Michael.
Yes. Yeah, am I on?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. My question or else comment would be, I am a member of ARP, and I am getting just inundated with repeated renewal notices, and I'll try to make this short. I've called them 3 times. I've left messages in the renewal notices, and I've sent that back. And then I got an email from them saying that, well, they just have what they're saying. It's just like we just keep sending this stuff out. And if you would happen to pay with a renewal, like 2 renewals in a row, you know, that you didn't really need, because they're just flooding people, and people are confused with it. And that they will refund, it's automatically refunded the payment. Well, that didn't happen. And it's just, how do you combat this? I got this email. I emailed him directly, and I got the president, and he emailed me back, and that was about 5 days ago. Today in the mail, I got one of their generic, or yesterday, one of their generic mailings in the paper, and then I got a billing statement, 3 of 3 billing statements, 3 separate envelopes, identical, for renewing my membership. This is a racket. And I think people just better be aware and really look closely at the dates.
Well, it happens with ARP, but I wound up getting a magazine subscription, a double one, because I kept getting these bills, and I thought, God, I thought I paid that, and I went ahead and paid it again, and then I start receiving 2 copies of the same magazine in the mail. Well, I'll tell you what, this is something we can definitely talk about. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on The Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking today about consumer scam issues with our 2 guests who come by once a month to talk with us. Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and Sandy Chalmers, Assistant Deputy Secretary with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Questions, we have open lines. Get you on real quick at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Michael had called us before the news break and just was inundated with letters from ARP in terms of, well, I got to resubscribe or renew, and he'd already done it, and he was getting irritated about it. I mentioned that I get these renewal notices oftentimes way months in advance from magazines, as an example, Sandy, and comment on all that?
Yeah, some of these companies and organizations can be very aggressive in marketing, and that's, you know, how they earn money, is getting people to re-up their memberships or resubscribe in the case of a magazine. The first thing is, Michael mentioned that somebody told him or wrote to him and said that if he double joined, that they would refund one of his membership fees, and that hadn't happened. And if he got that in writing, that's something that he could file a complaint with us about, and we would follow up with this organization on his behalf to try to get him some of his money back. One thing that you can do to kind of help manage this, because we're just inundated with magazine renewal notices every day, just make a note on your calendar or on your phone of the day that you re-upped your annual subscription, and then just don't pay attention to the mailings until it's time again to renew. So try to think of things like that that you can do yourself to kind of manage this, because otherwise, I agree, it's very difficult to remember when you resubscribed or when you re-upped your membership.
And thanks, Michael, again for that question and comment. You know, it's the weather's, before we go back to the phone here, is the weather's getting warmer, time for spring break and spring vacations. How do we know if a vacation offer is too good to be true? I get some in the mail that I look at and I think, there's no way this could be true. You know, fly you to Europe and stay at a place and everything's included, including the plane fare, for $600 or something. It's just not conceivable. Michelle.
You're right. I mean, having that instinct, that's going to be the first thing. You know, I think I said it earlier, and people make fun, but that if it's too good to be true, you haven't entered a contest. Why are you selected for this fantastic prize? But now's the time of year that we tend to see postcards that have very attractive resort or hotel names on them, and that you can get this reduced accommodations, but there might be these administrative fees that you have to pay or start adding up. Or all the resort, you get there and there is no room for you, or all the resort accommodations aren't included, and it starts really adding up, or it's unclear about airfare. So you need to stop, reflect for a minute, and then check it out before you make contact, because often it's to engage you in something else and just get your information, and then they disappear and are done, or you will only get a portion of what you believe you should be getting based on the postcard that you are sent. We haven't started to get any calls yet, but the weather is extending, our winter is, and I'm sure that those postcards are coming soon.
The state of Wisconsin also recently reached a settlement with a timeshare company for violating state law in marketing and selling timeshare services, which goes along to what we were just talking about, I think. And this is an important case, is it not?
Yeah, it was fairly significant for us. The settlement was in the six figures, which is not
cheap.
Insignificant. And importantly, some consumers and timeshare owners associations are going to get restitution on this. But this was a company that was offering to resell timeshares, and they would take deed to the timeshare and then just stop paying the annual maintenance fees. It was extremely problematic. And another important part of this settlement, this is a case that we worked with the State Department of Justice on, by the way, and there are attorneys. But this company is barred from providing timeshare marketing, sales, transfers, or resale services to Wisconsin consumers going forward. That's important.
Very important. Ron in La Crosse, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I get a lot of calls from what they call professional fundraisers. They're third-party organizations that raise funds or solicit donations over the phone on behalf of other organizations, charitable organizations. And I've heard I've asked them how much of every cents of every dollar that a person pledges or contributes do they pocket versus the end recipient, the charity itself. I've heard it can keep up to sometimes up to 90 cents of every dollar, depending on how many pledges come through with an actual donation. Is there a state regulation limiting how much a third-party professional fundraiser can keep?
I don't believe so, is there?
No, I'm not aware of one either, and it can be an incredible amount. So the charity that you actually want to give to can get just pennies on that dollar that you want to be giving them. So we encourage consumers to give direct, give when they're ready to give, using contact information that they have rather than responding to this phone call. The professional charities can sometimes be pretty aggressive, too, because oftentimes some of them, the local charity they're collecting for or say they're collecting for, don't even know that they're doing it. They're not doing it under any kind of agreement or contract or contact. They're just using that in a source to make money for their own business, in essence, because they're professional fundraisers. So be real cautious about that and check out through the Department of Financial Institutions who the registered charities in Wisconsin are and know who you're giving to up front.
Yeah, and even with those registered charities, it's not a bad idea to say how much of this goes for administration and how much actually goes to help the people or whatever animals or whatever that you're contributing for.
Right. That's part of the reporting.
We really advise not to respond to a telephone call about giving to a charity because you really don't know who that caller is, whether they may be a third-party fundraiser, they may be a crook. So it's impossible to know. So you can always ask for them to send you something in the mail. But as Michelle said, you make the decision on your own and give that way. Oh, another something they often say, too, is thank you for your past donations.
Yeah.
Well, no, but we never gave to you in the past.
Thanks, Ron. Carolyn in Minocqua, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, I wanted to share two experiences that I just had. One was my stupidity, I guess, in purchasing free face cream for the shipping cost. And the next month, we noticed an $89 charge on our statement. And when I called that number, he immediately said, oh, we'll credit it. But you're supposed to send it back in 14 days or some ridiculous thing. And we did check. We did get the credit for that. The second one was an email from iTunes, and it looked exactly like the iTunes page and everything for a charge for $97 or something. But to cancel it, you know, I clicked on how to cancel it, and then that's where they started asking for personal information. And I didn't fill it out. That's where I stopped. But then I looked it up online, and yes, that is another scam. But it looked exactly like iTunes.
Yeah. They're really good at it, aren't they, Michelle?
Those phishing emails, those imposter emails are incredibly good. I mean, we give you all the things to look for, but they get better, too. The typos, the lookalikes, the hovering over so you can see if the web link or the email address or the website address are actually the real location, but the misdirection. They're professionals at this. So great job in stopping at the point where you knew not to hand over information. That's a real success there. And as far as that free thing, when there's something free, being aware of what the catch and the hook is. Okay, I pay shipping and handling, but am I authorizing future monthly things? Is there a box checked that says, go ahead, send it to me every month unless I cancel? And then those details about, it's only 14 days that you have to act. So really paying attention to those pieces
and
for everyone else.
I thought I read it really carefully, but apparently not.
Thanks, Carolyn. Appreciate the call. Nancy in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I was just questioning. I've been getting some emails from PayPal saying that there's not something wrong with my account and I should call a number. But I have nothing to do with PayPal. So is there a scam going on with this?
Oh, I bet there is. Sandy, is there?
Yeah, you know, I can't imagine how many billions of dollars exchanged through PayPal on an annual basis, and crooks follow that very closely. There are a lot of PayPal scams out there, and this is the perfect example of a phishing scam where they say there's something wrong with your account, and then they will ask you for your account number, password, personal information, and because many PayPal accounts are connected to your bank account, then they have access to your bank account. So in your case, you've never done business with PayPal, so you know it's a scam, but just be alert. So many of these emails are fraudulent. You really have to be skeptical when you see these emails.
Yeah. Well, I know my husband uses PayPal, and I said, are you getting them? And he said he is, but he's not doing anything with it. And I said, good, because just leave it alone.
There you go. Thanks, Nancy.
All right. Thank you.
I appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. In the recent FBI case, I read this and I couldn't believe it. Well, I did believe it. A woman was scammed by two Nigerians for $2 million. Now, that wouldn't happen to me because I don't have $2 million, but how do you... You're familiar with this case, Sandy.
Right, and these romance scams are extremely problematic because these criminals are willing to invest a lot of time and energy because they know the potential payoff can be so huge. And typically, when we hear about these, people have lost like in the five figures or six figures, but here you have a seven-figure dollar loss, which is just incredible. But some red flags you can be watching for. If somebody strikes up a relationships with you and they say that they're from the U.S., but they're currently overseas, that's a red flag. If they say that they know it's love almost immediately. So we all know people who may be vulnerable to this kind of a scam. This might be one that it's worth having a brief conversation with them about because the stakes are so high. And if you're the victim, you really believe that you're in love. And so it's really hard for a victim in this situation to admit that this person that they've invested a lot of time in getting to know is a criminal.
And this wasn't the $2 million all in one lump sum either. It was $30,000 at a time over a period of a long period of time.
Right. And we've had some cases in Milwaukee where people lost, you know, in the five and six figures. So they usually go on over an extended period of time. There's a lot of relationship building and investment by the criminal up front. And then... they usually will say something to the victim like, don't tell anyone, this is between us, you know, I love you. So the victim feels like they can't share the information. Even if they start to get concerned, they're afraid of what might happen to their quote-unquote loved one.
And that person did not get her money back at all, did she?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
It was... Really, really, really a sad situation.
Yeah, and usually, you know, it's like Sandy said, an intervention type situation that will help stop. And often that may come from the bank or the financial advisor because they see it and start to get suspicious there. But if friends or family can step in sooner because they're hearing other things about this online presence that becomes pretty dominant in someone's life, that can be a time for questioning things.
Yep. Well, let's take some more calls here. Terry in Edgerton, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Terry. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have been getting phone calls upon phone calls that there's something wrong with my computer. And finally, I just told him, in fact, a half hour ago, I got another call. I said, stop calling me. And it's a foreign accent that he's calling from, and I just want to know if it's a legit or what's going on with these calls.
Yeah. It's not legit.
It's not legit. It's what we call a tech support scam. So it's that your computer has a virus and is sending off signals, and we can help you for $395 or whatever the cost may be. Just give me the money, and then let's give me some access to your computer. So they're going after some financial aspect, but then also if you give them access to your computer, they can be loading malware on there remotely. They can be monitoring sharing and downloading files and things and getting access to information. So just hang up, or if you can, don't answer the phone and wait for your machine to say that, you know, someone start to leave a message of someone that you want to talk to. Let your friends know that that's the method you're going to use to answer your phone.
Oh, yep. They're so frustrating.
Yeah, yes. They...
2-3 times a day I get calls, and, you know, I just finally said, now I put a caller ID in, so now I can see when that number comes up, I don't answer.
Yeah, that's one method. Now, be just cautious that they can easily change the call appearance or where they're calling from, but that's a good tool to start using there.
Well, I've got a list of probably 15 different numbers that all relate to the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but as Michelle says, if you get a call that even has maybe an Edgerton, looks like it's coming from Edgerton, it may not be coming from Edgerton. So it's probably better to let it go to your answering machine, and then you can, as she says, then you can, you know, if it's somebody you know or whatever, then just go ahead and answer it. Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it. Jim in Lodi, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for the great show. Just wanted to, Nancy was on a few minutes ago talking about PayPal.
Yeah.
And I received a call from PayPal yesterday, and they didn't ask me for my information. They gave me the last 4 digits of one of my credit cards, saying that there was a suspicious charge. I immediately went on the web, looked at that credit card, and lo and behold, there was a charge for $2,718. That was still pending. There was another charge for $199 still pending. And last month I got hit for, I think it was about $160, and that one had cleared. But and my credit card is a Citi card, and, you know, it's all going to be taken care of. But people should know that PayPal is reaching out when they find suspicious information. So the rule of thumb is don't give them information. Take the information they give you and check things out.
Yeah, well, that makes some sense, Michelle.
It is. It does make some sense that they may be putting some fraud in, similar to credit card companies. However, my big however here is I wouldn't confirm anything during that call. They're giving you the last 4 digits. Thank you for the information. I'll check things out. Goodbye. You know, or if you're even going to talk, I wouldn't confirm. Yeah, those are my digits or anything of any nature back to them, even though they're initiating. Because it could be a con artist on the other end of the line who's confirming that they have the right name associated with a card that they've gotten access to through either a breach or a skimmer and I know we probably seem overly skeptical here and everything, but we see these types of situations, and the con artists are incredibly complex in the way that they initiate these scams in trying to be helpful to you. So it would be great if PayPal has initiated a fraud patrol like that, but I'd be still very cautious about confirming anything from an unsolicited call there.
Don't say yes.
Don't say yes, Larry. Yep.
Thank you so much. Gary on Facebook wonders how long an employer can keep personal information. A past employer sent a letter saying an employee's laptop was stolen from a car and 20,000 past employees' information was on it. He had not worked there for 9 years. And here it is 9 years later, and this past company still had his personal information.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the laws are on that. I don't think 9 years is a long time for an employee to keep information, actually. But this is not the first time this has happened where former employees' information has been the subject of a data breach. And this is one of the reasons why we say over and over how important it is to monitor your credit reports on a regular basis, looking for unauthorized lines of credit that have been established without your knowledge, looking at your monthly credit card and financial statements, because data breaches have become so common, you have to be very vigilant.
And on that note, we are out of time. Michelle, Sandy, thank you so much. And you're back on April 6th. Well, we'll look forward to that.
Great.
Michelle Reinen, excuse me, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and Sandy Chalmers. She is Assistant Deputy Secretary with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.